Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 77. Craig Hamilton of CitizenCraig.com. Matt Scalisi, editor of FilmNerds.com. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider. Ben Flanagan of Aspect Radio.
Craig.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, me and you are the only two Film Nerds members right now that have seen The Force Awakens.
That's right. Does this mean that we can actually put in The Force Awakens spoilers into a podcast?
Yeah, let's just spoil away, man. I mean,
okay.
So I'm going to just kind of ask you I think one of the spoilers is a good topic here, because I think that's been a concern for a lot of us going into this movie, was trying not to get it spoiled for us. So did you have anything, any of the big reveals, do you feel like had them spoiled? I know you were exposed to a lot of people that maybe had privileged information and you were nervous about it. Were any of the big reveals spoiled for you?
So maybe one. And there are some that I've been, that someone has kind of, or that I've heard spoken aloud, that quite possibly hasn't been spoiled yet, if they're going down that way. But, yeah, I think there's a couple, that definitely did. One was, Captain Phasma.
Wait, that's the one that has the, like, black stormtrooper uniform?
Yeah, like the chrome?
Yeah.
Shiny, yeah. Yeah, see, I didn't know that was a woman. So,
I didn't even know it was a character going into the movie.
Well, yeah, so I had seen, like, you know, I'd look at some of the merchandise and stuff like that, so I knew, but I had stopped because they had revealed, like, a lot of crazy characters with that merchandise, so I kind of stopped, but not after I had seen this Captain Phasma character, and then I'm talking to somebody who says it's a woman, and I'm like, no! Because that would have been insane in the theater. How did it feel watching this, and you're like, oh, this is, you don't even think about it possibly being a woman.
I guess not. I mean, I definitely, as soon as I heard that character's voice, I knew it was a woman.
Right. Right.
But yeah, that turned out to not be that big of a spoiler, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That character doesn't really do much.
Nah.
In this one, so.
Just kind of a goon.
Yeah. Just kind of screws it up for the first
right,
order.
That's right. Yeah. She totally caves when they're like, take the shields down. She's like, all right, whatever.
Yeah, send me to the trash compactor.
I was really worried because I knew there was at least kind of one big twist as to a character's identity. And I feel like there might be more coming in future movies, but the one that we get in this movie, obviously, is about Kylo Ren, who I knew was, I guess I knew at a certain point was being played by Adam Driver, but for some reason I heard a lot of people talking about, I think maybe one of the internet theories that was floating around out there was that Kylo Ren was going to turn out to be Luke. And I had heard, I basically saw it somewhere. It might have been somebody joking. And I remember being, I was really pissed about it. And I was like, I hope that's not correct.
Yeah.
And I'll be
yeah.
pissed if that turns out to be what it is. So
yeah.
I didn't really have anything spoiled for me. I had no idea that he was going to turn out to be Han and Leia's kid. Although I guess I thought somehow like some of the younger characters would probably be somebody's kid.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I had no idea that specifically was going to be what it was. So I thought that was a cool reveal. And that part of the story was really strong for me. And like, I felt a real pull about that character. Like, Adam Driver's a super unlikable guy. Like, intentionally, I think, but like I really felt for his character, and I feel almost like I think I feel sympathy for him at times in this movie, because he does seem, you know, really torn about it, and obviously you care about Han and Leia and their feelings about it too.
Yeah, they do not try in any way to hide his internal struggle with the light and the dark side. He basically says himself, you know, and the head emperor, whatever that weird guy is, even addresses it, and it's like there's this known thing that he is struggling, you know. He hasn't really been tested like that, so, which is a different take. Vader seemed completely on the dark side until the
right. I think that's cool that they have this character who's kind of, that nobody else has the advantage of knowing how the Force works, basically. Basically until the very end of this movie.
He doesn't have an understanding of Darth Vader, though, really, because he's sort of like praying to him, sort of.
Right, yeah.
But he doesn't realize that Vader turned back in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a lot of callback to that with what Han and Leia are talking about doing. And, you know, I'm sure that will play itself out over the course of, like, that's a piece of knowledge we already have watching this movie. If you had just seen Return of the Jedi, which, was talked about on the FNU podcast of it, is the fact that people can turn back to the good. So we already know that going into this movie. I thought that was kind of a cool thing for them to play off of. But I did think, you know, probably the thing that was the thing that could have ruined the movie for you if you already knew it going in was that I didn't even know there was a major character death. I think to have even known going in that somebody was going to die would have really spoiled it for you. And I really have not been that careful, I would say. And I didn't know anything about it coming, but I think, you know, once that scene started, I probably knew it was going to happen, but it made sense in the movie. It was great. I thought it was really effective.
I'm so glad he died. No, like, I'm the same way. Like,
No, it worked.
I agree. I was really careful. Like, I wasn't walking around eggshells, but I just was pretty mindful about what I was looking at and stuff like that. But I was kind of like you when that scene started. I began to think, oh, and then I was kind of thinking that which characters are left. Who do we have? Who is doing what? And I'm like, they're gonna kill this person because so and so knows how to do this, and so and so's with this person. So now you can replace this person, this character, really. Even though I wish this person wouldn't die, it kind of makes sense. And then, sure enough, it.
Yeah, I mean that is. I'm really curious to see how the whole thing continues to play out because I love the inclusion of the original characters in this, but they don't, you know, they are very clearly the secondary characters in this.
Right.
And they're not what's driving the movie. And the whole thing hinges on these new characters being both likable and well performed, and they totally are. I mean, I really was completely impressed and drawn in by John Boyega and Daisy Ridley and Adam Driver too. I just thought all three of them, they're such important parts of this movie working, and they all hit it out of the park to me. I just thought they were, I mean, Ridley, I guess I had no expectation of because I've never seen her in anything else, and she's just so great in this movie, man. She's so likable.
Yeah, totally. And Boyega is sort of, we kind of briefly talked about this privately, but he's almost like an audience member in how appreciative he is of what's going on and how he's like a fanboy in that world. And he does kind of
a nerd accent, too. Did you see that, too?
And the way he reacts, he's so appreciative to what's happening around him in a way, and he's so open with just, I guess, what he's doing in the movie. As a character and as an actor, he's just completely out there. I guess what I'm trying to say is there's no real reason to dislike him in any way.
Yeah, he's actually a lot more likable. Like, all of these guys are, I mean, I think that Han Solo is kind of right out of the gate in these movies, fantastic and likable and, you know, the big gripe that a lot of people have with Star Wars is that Luke is so whiny all the time.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, these characters are all, they're all so likable. And he's sort of, I would guess, a tier below those three I mentioned. But Poe Dameron, that character, he's probably kind of more like this movie's Han Solo, although they're not really, they really didn't build this movie to be like, this guy is this, and this girl is this. And, I mean, they're all playing different roles for sure. But he's a really cool character, and you texted me already, Craig, that like there's a scene where when he sort of shows back up in the movie, it's probably the most badass part of the whole movie, and they really sell you on him being like, you know, kind of the action star of this movie.
Yeah, and it's a really, really cool tracking shot, you know. It's not overly long, but you just follow. We're going to talk about it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just follow Boyega through this kind of this impromptu resistance first order kind of battle going on. And Poe shows back up and starts just like shooting down these TIE fighters. And Finn has no clue who's driving this jet, though he's met Poe before. And he stops fighting, but he's kind of running through the battle, and he's watching this one pilot in the sky just knock everybody out. And he stops and he just says, "Yeah! What did he say? That's one hell of a pilot."
He says, "That's right? One hell of a pilot." Yeah.
And he looks back and talks to somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Craig, like that, I really didn't think about it until you put it that way, but he totally is kind of the stand-in member of the audience in this movie. Which is, it's a really strange choice that J.J. Abrams did that, but it worked really well. Like, he kind of is that way in the beginning of the movie, too, when he takes over the gun on the TIE fighter, and he kind of gives you your fist pump moment in this movie.
Yeah, totally. And he's funny, but it's not these really heavy comedic cues or anything. It's just, like, the things he says are really kind of, I guess, what people might be saying in our world today, kind of the way people react or respond to things that are funny.
Yeah,
he's that person in there.
If anything, if there's a comic relief in the movie, it's probably more him than anybody else. And it's like, man, does it really make the prequels look a lot worse by comparison? That it's like, you can have a comic relief character that isn't a total Jake in this movie.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Because how many different incredible-looking characters, weird aliens, did we see in this movie? A ton.
I mean, there's plenty, but they never felt... I mean, gosh, I forgot the actress's name.
Maz or whatever?
Lupita Nyong'o's character. She's not obnoxious or crazy at all. I mean, the character design is kind of reminded me a little bit of Yoda, but she's mostly just kind of an old lady that knows a little bit more than everybody else. And you know, I thought that character was fine.
It's sort of like a cantina version of a cantina scene where you see all these different. But you see them all briefly. It's just kind of showing off different aesthetics and different character designs. But that's it. You don't have anybody following them around, yapping its head off.
Yeah, you know. way less like burping and farting CG characters. Way less droid humor. Even though BB-8 is a big part of the movie, they don't really like. I feel like there's not even as much of an emphasis on him as there ever was on C-3PO and R2-D2 in the original trilogy.
Yes, and I think when BB-8 is in the scene, every maybe a handful of those very few scenes anyways, there's something endearing about him, or maybe humane about him, or whatever, this droid, because like when he gets trapped in that net, it's just like the saddest sound and the saddest posture that this ball can make, you know. It's an immediate, like, oh, I feel bad for this droid. And then when it kind of talks with Rey, it's like, well, that it's making sounds like it's saying yeah or something. I don't know.
Right.
But that's all we need. We just need to connect with it some way.
I feel like I read somewhere, and I've been avoiding reading it, but I feel like someone told me or read that the guy that plays John Ralphio on Parks and Recreation did the, like, he was, like, behind the vocals on BB-8. Oh. I think that's right. I'm going to have to look that up now that I can actually read about this movie.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, the only other thing I want to ask you about, because I think we'll probably have more podcasts about this in the coming days and weeks. What did you think about the idea of them? Basically, they just did, like, the guest star, but way bigger. And I'm like, my first thought when I saw it was like, this is kind of a little bit like Indominus Rex, a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I mean, you could just do the Death Star. You could just make it a T-Rex if you wanted.
Just make them build it again.
Right,
A third time.
One more time, we're going to do this.
Third time's a charm. You could actually say that in the movie. Third time's a charm, Lord. You know?
Yeah.
Or Master, third time's a charm. Or something, you know, like, so as it was getting destroyed, I was really kind of, that's when it started to implode, I was really kind of thinking, you know, what do I think about this being so much like the Death Star, just a lot bigger? And so, and I tend to do that in movies, and I got to really stop myself because I'll start thinking about previous scenes while a new scene's going on, so I can't do that. So, but I was like, okay, well, and all this is in a matter of seconds, but I'm like, okay, so there's two more movies. Are there going to be two more, like, huge weapons that they can build?
Yeah.
Like, can we have one span two movies or something? Or is it going to be about maybe a really super awful villain, maybe not a weapon?
They're going to
destroy every planet that exists. I mean, what's the point of...
I mean, they're just railing on planets in this galaxy.
Yeah.
There can't be that many. Although I will say this, I was glad, like, when they blew up, when they showed the planet getting exploded, and it looked like Coruscant or whatever that freaking planet was from just like from Episode 1. I was like, fine, blow up one of the freaking planets. I'm fine with that.
Blow up that one.
Should have been Naboo.
Yeah, one of those ones that was celebrating that newly added celebration from Return of the Jedi. I'm pretty sure one of those was in there too. It's like, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, Weesa ain't so free now.
No, Weesa dead. I guess that means Jar Jar's a ghost now, so he may show up in a.
Oh no! Oh damn! All right.
Well, hey, before we cut this off, or as I cut you off. Maybe you were going to head this way, but do you want to give, like, a rating, a first reaction rating? I mean, I usually have to sleep on this kind of stuff, but I can do one.
I mean, I'm pretty high on it right now. I feel like mostly my thought is it's so head and shoulders better than the prequels that we can start talking about now this franchise is, like, you kind of can start it at 4 if you want to. Like, you really don't. You even less than ever need to see the prequels, I would say.
Yeah.
So,
this
is just like, if I mean, I'm ready to give it a 4 right now because I just really like everything about how it works and how it plays out. Maybe I'll think of something I don't like about it eventually, but I just think it's totally right on par with the original three movies. It's, you know, probably... I don't know. It's hard for me to think of anything negative about it right now. Maybe that is because I just wanted it to live up to the originals, and it did. And that's all it needed to do for me to get 4. But I just think it's great. I think it's a great Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's sort of making the prequels be a little obsolete. I may eat my words, you know, in 3 years, but. I just think that it does fall so much in line with the original trilogy. Though there's been, you know, a few decades since that, it picks up in style. It picks up right where it left off. You know, it just says it leaves the CGI behind when you're talking about just simple things like running around in a forest. You know, they're running around in a forest, you know, or you can tell that there's no, you know, digitized environments being created and stuff like that when it comes to
No, synthesis. that was not the emphasis at all. I mean, there's plenty of digital environments, but they feel like they all really feel like real places.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about that. Well, long story short, I think I'm going to give it 4 as of right now, but while we're looking at these fights and stuff like that and these lightsaber fights, I'm thinking about those in Revenge of the Sith, like that green woman Jedi with the weird, like, horns that flop around on her head. Like that's the kind of crap that they made. Like, those were Jedis back then. And, like, the way they treat a Jedi, like, the way they treat a Jedi now is like, well, that's really what a Jedi, you know, it's just like, these aren't, like, crazy-looking, weird, you know, things running around, you know.
No, they all feel like, the Jedis actually feel like they have some importance in this movie and like it's a big deal.
Yeah. Right, yeah, exactly, because, you know, they're on the verge of extinction, which I think that'll be fleshed out in future movies, hopefully. That whole Luke backstory and whatnot, but.
Yeah, man. Well, congrats, Craig, we did it.
Yeah.
We made it through.
Congrats to you. Here's a toast to you and I.
Yeah, we're on the other side of it now.
Oh, man, I can't. So you'll see it again in the morning.
Yeah, I'm going to go see it again.
I hope to see it sometime next week again, but we'll see. There's also Spotlight.
Spotlight, yeah.
Okay, so I am here with my good friend, Wonder Mill Films co-founder and Star Wars super fan, Lee Fanning. Lee, how are you today?
Doing well, man. How you doing, man?
Very good. So you're the biggest Star Wars fan I know.
Wow. That's a statement.
It is. It is. It's... Well, I mean, when we were roommates together, it was 2005, and you watched Revenge of the Sith in the theater how many times?
You know, I was kind of a lightweight on that one. It was probably in the 6
really?
Or 7 range in theaters, yeah.
Yeah,
seven
only
minutes
7
was
times.
15.
Yeah. Lord. So you're a lifelong Star Wars fan. You know, I'll get right into it and say that the other day you posted your rankings of the Star Wars films and the new film Force Awakens, which is, you know, really well reviewed. I think all the film nerds are pretty fond of it. And I know you like it too. But you had it kind of in the middle of the grouping, above Jedi,
right.
But below
right.
Revenge of the Sith. So I guess to start off, give me a little bit of context on where you come from as a Star Wars fan, and then kind of give me your brief feelings on The Force Awakens, then we can get kind of more into it as we go.
Gotcha. Okay. So I guess I'm pretty firmly second generation. I was born in 86, so I missed all the original films in theaters. My brother was a big Jedi fan. He was born in 80, so he was a pretty good age when Jedi came out, and so that's kind of how I got into it. My dad has always been a big sci-fi fan, but not a really big Star Wars fan, so I don't have that story where, like, my dad was a big Star Wars geek. Now, he watches them, but that's about it. But I did come of age loving Star Wars during the one period in Star Wars history where there really wasn't a lot going on between 86 and about 91, 92, when the books started being published of the expanded universe in the early 90s. So it was funny because when I first really became aware of Star Wars and liking Star Wars, I didn't know a lot of people who had actually heard of it, which is unbelievable to think of now. So that's part of the reason I guess it became very personal for me as a kid. I like for a lot of other people too. So it's been a lifelong fan. I was the perfect age for the prequels. I was... I think I was in seventh grade when episode 1 came out. So I saw no flaws and that has aided me in my ability to really accept and embrace the prequels and to not get caught up on a lot of the nitpicks that people do, because all 7 of the films have a lot of things that if you really want to start picking them apart, they're pretty ripe for it, just completely honest. That's it. I did actually one last little thing. I almost got a chance to work at Lucasfilm this past summer, and I would have been actually at ILM. I do a lot of projection work. I did for the past like 7-8 years, and they needed a projectionist for dailies for episode 7. So I came very close to working on 7. I got second in that, but yeah, I wouldn't have done much. Probably wouldn't get a credit, but yeah, I almost was there and almost got it all spoiled and had to, you know, all that mess. But it didn't work out. So that was that's I guess the closest I came to being anything above just being a super fan. But other than that, you know, it's the one thing that I actually buy comic stuff still, and there's a lot of people know a lot more than me. But I do really love the mythology, and I really do love kind of keeping tabs on where they're taking the universe, especially now that they've kind of restarted the canon outside of the original movies, and expanding the universe brand new again, which is kind of fun.
Right. Yeah. So everything basically the prequels are still canon. So anything that's ever been in a movie is canon, but everything outside of the movies is no more.
So back, I think it was 2012 they did this, it was after the Disney acquisition. So the 6 films are canon, and the Clone Wars television series are canon.
Okay, the Clone Wars, series.
Along with the movie, right. And anything outside of that that was made prior to this, the announcement date, which was, you know, sometime in 2012, is no longer, it's called Legends now. So it's no longer canon. They're like the holiday special and, you know, the Joy cartoons and like, the Battle for Endor and Shadows of the Empire, Dark Empire, the comics, Dark Horse did, all that stuff is it's not considered. And it was always, just to give you a little bit of context of Star Wars, the way it used to work, there was this kind of, the relationship worked where whatever George Lucas did and Lucasfilm did directly had precedence over anything external, because Lucas was not involved with any of the external, you know, the novels and like that. He was basically just he licensed them for the, you know, to keep Star Wars going and to keep the brand, people aware of the brand, that kind of thing. But he didn't really care too much about the content, and so a lot of that there was a lot of continuity issues between those, especially when we went back to make the prequels. Because, you know, these guys have been working for 10, 15 years on just using what info they had from the original trilogy, and a lot of it contradicted what Lucas had in mind when he went back. So it was really, it needed a clean slate. The expanded universe, the original expanded universe, has a lot of really weird things. And, you know, I was never a fan of the what's now called Legends anyway, so I was I was okay with them dissolving. I know a lot of people aren't. And the good thing is they do still, like in Clone Wars, they would pull things from the EU. And then, you know, that usually they'd reinterpret it a little bit, but they'd pull things, and it now would be canon. That's actually what happened to Coruscant. Coruscant originally came from novels, and they brought that in for Phantom Menace, so that was kind of nice to see the pulling it in and making, not necessarily canonizing the version that was in the EU, but kind of establishing that, you know, that correlation between the two. But now, everything that's published now is coordinated by the Lucasfilm Story Group, and so everything is canon. And that's kind of a double-edged sword for me, just because I think it's ultimately an unsustainable model. You can't have that many, you know, because, I mean, they have, like, you know, like 4 or 5 comic series going, and they have, you know, 4 or 5 books a year, they have the TV show, the Star Wars Rebels on now. It's just fairly unsustainable in terms of keeping one consistent story. It's similar to the MCU in the approach, but I think even more risky than MCU because
they don't pull the comics in.
Exactly.
And then comics, you've got monthly, and Star Wars and Marvel comics are like cranking out right now. So you've got so many so much monthly content coming out. Getting back on track. So you like The Force Awakens. Do you love The Force Awakens? Which, that I feel like, at this point, you either love it or you hate it. I think it's gotten it's quickly gotten to that cultural saturation point where, if you're having a conversation, and the few conversations I've had with people, where it's like, I love it, good. And then if I hear anybody say, I liked it, but this and this, the room kind of sours on that person. Like, everybody's like, ah, what's the matter with you? You know, it's just like a leprosy.
Right.
So are you in the love or are you in the really like?
Well, I will say that polarizing opinion is between love and hate seems to be a problem, or not a problem, it seems to be a something that all the Star Wars films share in common.
Yeah.
It's really hard to even, you know, heck, even like the Clone Wars series. I mean, people will see you love or you hate. I'll say, no, I'll actually be a bit more benevolent. I will say there are things I absolutely love about the film. I mean, that's a bit of a cop-out, but it's true. Rey, for instance, was amazing and perfectly, in my mind, she was kind of, there are very few asterisks about the way they wrote her, the way they presented her. Maybe if you're going to be a stickler, again, you can pick anything to death. I've seen it twice. I'll see it again this weekend with my nephews. And there's some questions about Abrams' interpretation of how the Force works. Just being a stickler fanboy, but I was fine with the portrayal. I can see complaints there.
What is the sticking point that the Force can recall memories through objects?
Not so much.
Okay.
Because we've seen. I mean, there's been suggestions of that in the other films, but
okay.
Or at least it's a natural extension of, you know,
like
callbacks and things.
Empire.
In the film.
Yeah, visions and stuff, or present themselves. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. And they also expand on that in the Clone Wars stuff. Like Yoda has a whole arc where he encounters a bunch of visions and things of that nature. I'm fine with that. I think it was more the it kind of turned on for her, which is interesting. But it's like Anakin. So like in Episode One, Anakin was extremely Force sensitive and obviously could pod race and he could see things. So he had other things, but he still was pretty. Like he couldn't. You know, he couldn't use the Jedi mind trick yet. You know what I mean? So there's some questions. I don't think it's, again, it's a little bit nippy. I don't think it's something you can't kind of justify with some kind of line in a later film. I would say that's probably actually the one thing I'm a bit, I would, okay, so I guess the things I love, so Rey is something I love, but getting into the things that I'm a bit more kind of, what kept me from being able to say, oh, I wholeheartedly love this movie. And think it's the greatest thing ever, and blah blah blah. Is that there? It does seem very reliant on its sequels, and not in the same way that a lot of the other films of the saga are. It to me feels like there's not just from a we don't have full confirmation that Rey is Luke's daughter. Or, you know, even though it's heavily implied, it would obviously be a very big intentional bait and switch. It's a very obvious, heavy-handed red herring if that's not the case. But I'm not so worried about that. I didn't necessarily need a Field of Dreams moment at the end there. I think it was nice without the dialogue. But, I don't know, just in terms of some plot points and, some of the stakes of what, so I kind of understand, I believe that it's a, kind of a proxy war situation. The Republic is funding the Resistance. It's kind of like us funding, Syrian rebels or something like that. But what is the exact implication of the Republic being destroyed and, but kind of the stakes of that? Like, there's a lot of that, and it's just kind of funny. So people complained a lot about the politics in the prequels. And that was one thing I found really satisfying because I had a better understanding of kind of how everything was going on in the universe, especially if you get to watch the Clone Wars. It really goes into a lot of the nuance of what people were fighting for in the Clone Wars. And this, I had a very, very, I didn't have much, a very clear picture of what was going on, I don't really know how powerful the First Order is. Obviously, they're pretty well funded if they can turn a planet into a, star system killer. But at the same time, like, how much of the First Order was blown up? I mean, maybe you could argue that A New Hope is similar, but there's enough politics in A New Hope to give you decent context. Plus, it's also not the seventh chapter in a very thoroughly established universe. It was essentially the first entry, so it didn't necessarily require, and I don't think you needed I didn't need a Senate session here, I didn't need the Phantom Menace, but I would have liked a little bit more context. I loved Rey. I loved I love Kylo Ren. I mean, I know everyone did, but Adam Driver, I loved him going in. I thought he was a really good casting choice, and I thought he delivered. I love the whole playing on the call to the dark being the call to the light. To tell you how much I love his development and how effective it was for me, when Han dies, I was not, because it's broadcasted pretty heavily.
Yeah.
Especially when he embraces Leia and he's about to go off. So I go, okay. And then you start thinking, this press junket Harrison Ford is doing, it's kind of the Han Solo send-off party, isn't it? If you really think about it. But anyway, what affected me the most wasn't Han's death initially. It was the fact that Kylo had the moment that Luke had and that Anakin had, and that he chose, not like Luke, he chose like Anakin, he chose to kill his father.
Yep.
And Anakin, it would be more of a metaphorical sense of Obi-Wan, but he kills his father and falls completely. And that's what hit me. Han's death didn't really hit me until at the end when, like, Chewie's doing his crying thing.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, man. Yeah, but it didn't really, that, like, Han's death, it felt so, I don't want to say nice, but it felt like it was very necessary. And again, kind of the in the mirroring of A New Hope, same thing with Obi-Wan, you're not really sad when Obi-Wan dies. You feel like it's kind of a necessary, kind of a noble death in that circumstance. Now, this is necessary in terms of making the villain go full circle, and that's not necessarily a good thing for the galaxy. But from a story standpoint, that was nice. And I think we talked about some of the, like, the usage of, like, the sun dying in that sequence and all that. And I would say in a normal film, that might be a tad heavy-handed, but it is Star Wars, and it's designed to be so, you know, there is nuance in the light and dark side of the Force, and I really like that they played that up in this film. That's something the prequels did lack a little bit in some areas with Anakin's fall. But this did a really good job of kind of exploring that subtlety a little bit more.
Thing.
So I think it worked.
I absolutely loved about the film and about Abrams' direction was that kind of, he was using the script, he was using the visuals, and he was using performance to back up the theme, that theme of the movie, and then the struggle that Kylo Ren was going through. And I feel like, you could call it heavy-handed, but when you're talking about Star Wars, and by extension, kind of big populist cinema, I mean, if D.W. Griffith had these tools, he would use them, and he would paint, or Charlie Chaplin, you know, they would paint the picture in the clearest possible way, and if that means staging it in such a way where he's literally standing in light and it shuts out, you know, at the darkest moment when he makes his darkest decision, that's I think that's just amazing big budget.
I agree.
Cinema.
I think the only thing that the one thing that undercut it a little bit was Poe's line. We flying around. He's like, as long as there's light, there's hope.
Dude, I don't know if that
would be a little bit. You like that?
Just because if it was delivered by, like, Rey or by Finn, I would be like, eh.
Yeah.
But that dude is such – Oscar Isaac is phenomenal in this movie. And he's such a square-jawed superhero that it's like, that's exactly what that guy would say. You know,
it's definitely in character, It did not feel weird coming from his mouth. I mean,
it sets up that theme and it hits home. And then you know – not only do you know the stakes, but you kind of know – the stakes. It's just so nicely drawn out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I don't know, there's something about Oscar Isaac, too, his performance. Like, he's so genuine, and, like, his excitement for flying like a TIE fighter, and, like, how quickly trusting he is of Finn. And in fact, I mean, I'm sure that I've seen some people complain about that, but at the same time, He just seems to like love life and like, you know what I mean? So there's just, and so that, again, with that line, there's like this, that so fits with how they portrayed his character. And I think that's such a, he was amazing. I think it's going to be great to see him develop because he was obviously from a functionality standpoint, structurally, it's more about the Skywalker's, establishment and, obviously the Finn relationship was a bit stronger in this one. And, the, having a focus on Finn was a bit stronger than, you know, we might see in the sequel. So I definitely would like to see a bit more Poe, because it was kind of fun on screen.
Yeah, I mean, he's like such the true believer. You know, he's
yeah.
And there was a moment in this where I was like, oh my God, why didn't they cast Oscar Isaac as Superman? You know, he's got this like Captain America Superman like purity to him that's like,
it definitely,
well, even if he was wrong, you know, if he had his convictions, he would feel the same way about the Empire or the First Order.
Right.
But that's just the kind of guy he is. And I love that, especially coming from Oscar Isaac, who usually plays, you know, bad guys or at least plays things a little bit more ironically, to see such kind of sincerity there. I thought it was fantastic.
Right. Now, I'm curious if you've heard anyone complain about there's some meta humor in the film.
Right.
Which it didn't bother me. But obviously Star Wars is not a very meta place in the universe, typically speaking. But he did have one of the best deliveries of that, the early going, when he's talking to Finn and about the whole mask, and or not Finn, sorry, to Kylo Ren. And he's like, you talk first, and you know, that whole exchange.
Right.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that stuff was great. It reminded me of the banter that we got in A New Hope and in Empire. You know, there's that great moment in Star Wars where Han Solo, you know, they're in the containment area, and the stormtrooper calls over the intercom, and they're like, "Hey, what's going on up there?" And he's like, "Oh, everything's fine. We're good. How are you?" And it's just like it's
exactly.
Such a colloquial kind of delivery that you don't necessarily expect, and you know, Han Solo has a lot of that. But I feel like this movie gets back a lot of that banter, and the fact that Han Solo calls Finn big deal, I don't know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think is really great. There's a bit of,
and again, some of it modernized for kind of the modern aesthetic with again the more meta kind of.
Yeah,
that's
I don't even know if that's meta. I think that's just adding it's like that 40s kind of banter to it. And I think that's more of the original trilogy than it is any kind of attempts at modernization. But I've only seen the movie once, so I need to take.
I think there are a lot of examples of what you're saying. I do think there are some odd moments that were very. That would not have made sense in the 70s. Like, that kind of humor, that would not have flown. You know what I mean? So I do think there is certainly deviation on that. And I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that's something that I'm sure some Star Wars purists will be upset about.
Whenever Maz said amazeballs, I felt like that may have been pandering to the modern moment a little bit too much. Joking. Where are you at on, the biggest thing that I've seen so far, the biggest criticism is that Abrams thing is, you know, he's such a good guy at setup, but there's not a ton of examples of him paying things off, whether that be, you know, the show Lost, that he kind of handed off before he started delivering answers. Super 8, I know a lot of people were, disappointed with the third act of that movie. The fact that he came in for two Star Trek movies and then, you know, bailed. I do think that those movies are self-contained and satisfying, but,
I agree.
So is that kind of your position is just, you know, this movie might not hold up as well on its own, without sequels kind of strengthening its storyline?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's honestly why it's behind Revenge of the Sith on my rankings. Sith is a very complete film. There are definitely some problems with the film. But all things being equal, I think that film gets roped in with Clones and Menace, which I also think are underserved by popular opinion. But I think it's way too much roped in with those films. I think it's far above in terms of cinematic quality than those other two films. I mean, I've always had it higher than Jedi on my list. It's just far more complete. Anakin's fall is really the complexity of his kind of characters, the build up and all that. I still have a little bit of some things I don't fully buy about the actual fall itself, even though it does mirror Jedi and Luke's temptation very well in a very unique way. But this one, yeah, I mean, it's funny. My initial response was in the first time I was talking to my brother at the theater, and I said, I still have mixed feelings. Not as many as I did, like, coming in, like, not as many, like, weary feelings about where the franchise is going. I'm really, honestly, in terms of the direction it set the franchise in, I couldn't be happier. I think it perfectly respects the what happened in the first six films. I think it perfectly respects the trajectory, aside from not understanding what the heck balance and the force means, and just muddying that even more. You know what I mean? Because that's really the only thing that you have to tiptoe around to not mess up with the canon at this point is, well, how do you deal with that? Like, what does balance mean to just the death of the Sith? Or what? And, you know, they mentioned at the very beginning, Max von Sydow says there can't be balance without the Jedi. But still, that's so oblique, and we still don't know what all that means. But what I said was, I have mixed feelings about Force Awakens, but a lot of those mixed feelings could probably go away if the sequels go, you know, a direction that I like. And I shouldn't have to say that about your movie. I mean, that's the New Hope and Empire both. And Empire ends on cliffhanger, but it's such a complete, it's probably the most complete film in the whole series.
Yeah.
And so there's definitely a way, and obviously you can catch it on that before, and I just felt there was a little bit too much. Now, the character arcs are all pretty satisfying. Again, there are some questions with Rey, but because of how it's staged, because of the obvious with the Q word, like, use, you know, when Kylo Ren's about to beat her and I can train your way to the Force, and then her moment there, as a great, nice kind of decision moment, a call to action moment, you know, in the myth cycle, it kind of notches that bullet point there. So their character, it's kind of like the inverse of the prequels in some ways. The dialogue and the characters are all there. It's more the kind of the outward structure that is not as nice. You know, it wasn't as original in its vision as the prequels were, where they really subverted what everyone thought the Star Wars universe could be. And obviously, it's part of the reason it felt such a backlash. And I think it's part of the reason why initial honeymoon thought about this film is that it's so perfect, because it is so similar structurally and just kind of, even just, I mean, everyone's talking about just,
yep.
It's funny, there's a lot of mirroring in the prequels, but there's not a lot of homage. In this, it's more homage than mirroring. And that's not necessarily something I can't get over, but it's definitely a valid criticism. You know, it's one thing to rhyme, it's another thing to pillage, I guess, if you will. But there was some nice subversions of kind of the previous films, obviously, going to the Death Star to rescue Rey, or sorry, Starkiller Base to rescue Rey, and he doesn't need rescuing, those kinds of things. I'm very happy with the film, very happy with the direction that they're taking the Star Wars story, just, you know, the core story. Obviously, the mixing of the practical effects and the CGI was spectacular, and it's the right way to go. You know, I do think, I don't bemoan the technical experiments in the prequels. I think that's Lucas, he's an experimenter. Star Wars, New Hope worked barely. Like, it was mostly, you know, it didn't work. Early cuts of it that he showed to filmmaker friends, it was atrocious. It didn't work. So he's, by nature, he's kind of a commercial experimental filmmaker. There were going to be things that just weren't going to work. This was much more, less risky. It was much more about the book. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But in terms of the embracing of kind of the old guard and the new guard, it got a little overhyped, I'll be honest. I mean, how many Joe average fans really notice the difference between practical and CG in a lot of situations? But it was very well, obviously it was very well done and beautiful. And John Williams does it again. I've been listening to the soundtrack, and his new themes are just amazing. And I just can't believe how, you know, how prolifically stellar he's been able to be.
In his career. I mean, if you take the saga on the whole, you know,
yeah.
Unless you maybe count ILM, Yeah, I think he is. I think he's the MVP of the six films over even over George Lucas. Because
you
can
probably.
Listen to those. You can listen to those albums, and if you've seen the movie, they play in front of your head. I mean, he takes the opera. He puts the opera in space opera, and
exactly.
It's so. It's so evocative and it's so iconic, and it's amazing that he's done seven films, and each of them. I mean, even the worst prequel. You know, even. Attack of the Clones has this phenomenal score that raises that movie. So I can't wait to dig into the new soundtrack.
Yeah, it's great. It's and that obviously my tendency with soundtracks, any movie soundtrack I buy is to listen to the last track. So you should always then delve into the to the end credits, which is all the themes. And it's that. The whole thing's great, but that moment, that's the thing. I was like everyone else. I think we were all a little concerned about how Luke, obviously, he wasn't in the marketing, he wasn't on the press junket. People were going nuts about Luke not being, front and center. Obviously, we see now why they did it the right way. I mean, obviously, you show a shot of it, and that's the whole movie. Plus, that reveal was so powerful. But again, I think everyone was always was a little tentative, too, that Luke was either going to be, they were going to, make him into a cyborg or something, or they're gonna mess something up.
He was gonna be Kylo Ren. That was the big thing.
That was
a theory. Scared of.
That he was gonna be the man pulling strings, or that he was. Just from an outside standpoint, Mark Hamill right before he got cast was not in the greatest shape and looked a little worn out, and we were a tad worried he wasn't gonna look like Luke again. Abrams even said that much about Harrison. He said, "I knew Harrison Ford would be awesome, but I didn't know if we could get Han Solo back." And of course, they did, and they succeeded really well with that. Same with Luke, and same with Leia. I mean, I think I was afraid with Leia, with Carrie Fisher, it was going to be kind of a, Marion in King of the Crystal Skull kind of thing, where she didn't fully come to bat. And she did, and she got some pretty bad lines, too. She had all the exposition, the exposition, and she did so well. But again, Mark Hamill, that moment was so powerful. And again, that was. So great that they made Rey work so well, because that not just anyone. I love Star Wars and all the times of it, and I love the mythology, and I love the Skywalker line. So I'm very scrutinizing about. That was something I always had a problem with the extended universe, is I never really felt like they fully got to respect that they let some people in the Skywalker club they probably shouldn't have. It was my opinion. But with Rey, it's like she's holding that Anakin's lightsaber that was. Obviously it's kind of the Excalibur of this new series, but it's been the key figure in all the films, starting with Sith. And here she is presenting it. And it's a nice little callback to Episode 4, by the way, with Obi-Wan presenting that same lightsaber to Luke and kind of making that his call to action. And that's kind of how this one ends, with trying to bring Luke back into the fray. But that was such a great moment. And I mean, Mark Hamill's in it for less than a minute, maybe a full minute.
Yep.
And but that he gives you so much with just a look. It's just and just a couple of a medium and a close up, and then that one in shot on the helicopter in long range. It's amazing. So
for me, that in that moment, the movie went from because I was terrified before that. I was like, okay, this is really good. I really liked everything. If it closes on her flying off the Millennium Falcon and we never see Luke and we never pay that off, this will be D minus letter grade. I will be furious that they use this whole movie to set up something that we never see. And then when in a totally wordless sequence with, like you said, a few simple shots, one complicated shot in a real location with no dialogue, they used pure film grammar, pure cinematic language to totally tie everything up. And I was like, oh, A plus, right, got it. The turnaround was amazing.
Yeah. Cemented Rey's journey so well, it perfectly and that was and I love that. I think that's a great setup for the next film. Another thing I was gonna say in on that, that's interesting is they also have Snoke, and obviously he's a hologram, and he's talking to Huck. He's like, "Get Kylo Ren and come to me if I'm finished training.
Yeah.
I never bought into this Luke being bad. I just thought there's no way they're going to do that. It doesn't work for Luke's character. It's killing the other ones. And it's just not that interesting. We've already... I'm actually a little, like, another Dark Skywalker. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Even with Kylo, with a new character. And that one makes a bit more sense because of, you know, the whole generational thing. But I was like, no way. And plus, there's a whole thing in Jedi when he makes his decision. He's like, I'll never turn to the dark side.
Yeah.
I think you sell cheap in Jedi if you make him bad. So I never bought into it, even though it is J.J. Abrams and he loves to kind of trick you. But then, like, we hadn't seen him yet, and there's that setup right there with Snoke. And so for just a moment, I was like, that better not be how this thing ends. It better not, like, be Hux and Kylo going to, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
It's like, well, thankfully not. Thankfully they went a direction that I think all of us were much happier to see. Really cool thing I wanted to point out, I don't know if I know probably ran out of time, but I think Rian Johnson here I'm really excited about A. I really like what he's done, what he said about his kind of love of the entirety of the Star Wars saga. I'm curious, it seems like he has the burden of tying the mythology together. There were some references to larger mythology in this one. Obviously, I mentioned Ballots before. Obviously the dream sequence, or not dream, but kind of the vision sequence where we see Bespin. We actually hear Ewan McGregor in that sequence. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, yep, yep.
Yes, like a new line. He like came in and recorded a new line for that.
Yep.
Cool. We hear Alec Guinness, we hear Yoda, we hear the youngling screaming early. That's kind of the first thing she hears, at least that was my interpretation. Then, of course, we get information, new information, like the Knights of Ren slaughtering the new Jedi Order and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of great meat there, and like some of the things where I will be very excited when they create like the novels or the comics that detail that information, because I'd love to know more about it. But you're right. With Abrams, he didn't commit to really anything. The only real commitment he made was Kylo's fall, complete fall. And that was not really, that's a new part of mythology, a new notch in mythology, but there wasn't any, again, like a definitive, interpretation of the balance or, references to how certain aspects of the earlier films fully impact this film. Obviously there's some just in the sake of it being in the same continuity and whatnot. But, so I'm curious to see how that plays out. And it does feel like that, now that we're going to be seeing Luke, and I do hope Luke's a pretty big factor in the next one. I was always afraid when they announced it, he was just going to be more of a Yoda figure where he's in, you know, a third of one movie kind of thing. It seems like they are kind of set up a him being a pretty important character, not just from a, he's important to the universe, but in a, actually, like, similar to Harrison Ford in this film, where he's essentially the second lead of the film, or third lead of the film. Just by the very fact that he's probably going to have to face Kylo again. And I think it's really interesting, too, because Leia, I wonder if Leia's going to lose her, just obviously, like, bring Kylo home, bring him back. She's kind of the Luke to his Vader. And it seems to me, and my brother has been talking a lot about the correlations with Arthurian lore, and if Kylo Ren is Mordred, all this kind of stuff, it's really a really cool take, and it makes a lot of sense considering how, you know, Star Wars always tends to borrow from classic mythology. So is that going to be a turtle? Luke is now, he can't be saved. You know, he's not like Anakin. He has to be killed, and Leia is like, you know, we can still save him. Is that going to be a conflict? If they set it up, it could be. So it's really exciting to see where it can go, but it does definitely feel like he got to set the board and, all right, you guys have fun.
Yeah, which exactly.
It's good and bad. I think if you're looking at it as a standalone, that's a definite complaint, and that's definitely something that you can count it off for. But I think in terms of it being part of the larger trilogy, I'm very forgiving of the Star Wars fan. I even like the Clone Wars theatrical movie, which is really the only Clone Wars series that is legitimately bad. Oh, it's bad.
That's so bad.
But it's bad. The Ahsoka is so good. I mean, she's not good in that one, unfortunately. They kind of underserve her, but she becomes so good in the rest of the series. When you watch guys, you're like, it gets better. You're forgiving. It gets better.
Yeah, I mean,
Rebel season.
the great thing they have is they have Ryan Johnson for the second one. So he's made three movies with Brick, Brothers Bloom, and Looper, where those movies are very much about a kind of naughty, like K-N-O-T-T-Y, and kind of convoluted story logic going on, and characters,
right.
You know, well, him as a writer and a director coming up with inventive and entertaining ways to kind of undo all those knots.
Exactly.
And he's a fantastic visual stylist, and I know a lot of people are down on Colin Trevorrow as the director of Episode 9, but I'm kind of okay with it because I bet you that one is going to be the most streamlined of the three in terms of just paying off a bunch of stuff. And if there's one thing that you can say about Jurassic World, it's full of really good moments. Really good, simple, big blockbuster moments that pay homage to the things that came before it. You know, it's not super original, it's not super complicated, but it is visually engaging and it is fun. You know, and I feel like that's probably why they got him, is that they wanted a big, fun, happy closer to this new trilogy.
And I would say with him too, with Jurassic World, the issue with Jurassic World was not the type of performances, it's not the visual staging, it's not the blocking. It's just there's no character moments in the script. The only decision made in that movie that shows any character change is when the Velociraptors turn, like turn back to help. That's the only literally
that's
the only
great.
Thing. So. It's not so much that I'm not worried about. I don't really blame him because it's very fun to watch, very enjoyable, and it tricks you into thinking things are happening, that there are like real character moments, all that kind of stuff. There aren't, but it tricks you into that. And not that I want to be tricked into Star Wars. What I'm saying is that I think he is not. That movie succeeded despite shortcomings of the script. Maybe he can't save a bad script, but I'm pretty confident that we're not going to get any horrible scripts in any Star Wars films. I think Kathleen Kennedy is just too smart. I think Disney's too smart. So I have full faith in that. In how they approach that. I don't feel as honestly. JJ was the only one I was a little worried about, and I like JJ as a choice. It's just given his track record, and I think he did a fantastic job. I really enjoyed Force Awakens, and it's nothing else. It's got me on fire for the new trilogy, and that's kind of its primary function anyway. So.
Yep, Star Wars is back.
Yes,
and that was what it was set out to do, and it definitely hit the mark.
It definitely succeeded in that. Yes.
Yeah. Well, thanks for talking to me, Lee, and I'm glad you enjoyed the film, and maybe we can get on the phone and talk about this and other movies again sometime.
Sure. Thanks so much, Ben.
Hey, Graham.
Hey, Ben.
So, just a couple of days ago, we, like most of the rest of the world, finally saw Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, after years of anticipation, years of scratching our heads about what went wrong with the prequels and asking ourselves, will it ever be great again? And we had to rely on J.J. Abrams, the guy who obviously had the huge TV background but has made a clear name for himself as sort of the rebrander as of late with the Mission Impossible franchise, the Star Trek franchise, and now the Star Wars franchise. They handed it over to him, and now we've finally seen this finished product, and we, you know, have sort of tossed objectivity out the window for a while just in terms of being excited for this. This could make our beloved movie franchise relevant and good once again to us as movie lovers. So, I mean, forget the anticipation aspect of it. We've seen it. So I'll just talk to you. What'd you think?
I really liked it a lot. I loved it. It was a great experience. Saw it with you, Mom and Dad, and Tess. Your wife and your unborn child was there as well. And it was amazing. It was just a great experience. I was glad we all got to see it together. And I think that's what it's all about, is seeing it with with, you know, your friends and family. And I was just glad, first of all, that I was able to see it in my hometown on a big screen with great sound at the Tuscaloosa Theater here. It's just a great facility. I loved it. It all comes down to story. And even though there are a lot of questions, because it's a really complex situation that Abrams and Kasdan have created here, but the basic aspects of the story, the two new characters that were introduced, and sort of where it starts and where it leaves us at the end, it intrigues me, and I cannot wait to see where it goes. And aside from the story, it was a blast. It was so much fun. The action set pieces were so great. The nods to the saga itself, the original trilogy, got me really excited. And when new faces, when vehicles would pop up, or familiar faces, I should say, would pop up, it was just really, really exciting for me. And so I give it an overall positive review. And but yet there are still some serious questions and concerns, not only about where we go from here, but with aspects of the movie after having seen it just one time.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I think this movie is a total blast. And I wanted to wait on really sort of expressing myself, whether that was to other people or publicly, about how I felt about this, because I tried to learn as much as I could from the prequel experience, because like a lot of other people, the first time I saw that, I wanted it to be great. I wanted to feel like I'd seen a great Star Wars movie, and it probably, you know, during the movie I noticed that it wasn't, but I wanted to refuse to believe that. And so I didn't really sleep on it, and I wanted to do that this time just to make sure I feel the way I do about this. And what's interesting about it is going into it, I don't know what the level of expectation for what the actual movie would be for people. It didn't have to be better than any of the original trilogy, but it shouldn't have just been better for the prequels, because the bar was obviously so low with those. So for me, it was great. I share some of the issues that you have, but I want to see it again, because I think that I just probably overthought it while I was watching it and tried to analyze every single little frame and moment and ask myself, how great is this? Is this cool? Is this lame? Does this work? Does this fit the universe? But regardless of all that, and I will see it again, as I know you and many others will many times before it leaves theaters. But I'm with you. I mean, this movie is just a fast, just fun, just unbelievable ride that I think most people wanted to see. I think J.J. Abrams totally delivered on what we all hoped he would. He obviously revitalized this franchise in a huge way. The box office obviously speaks for itself, but regardless of those numbers, people seem to love this movie. They see, and people who go back and see it again seem to really love it. And it obviously holds up on second viewings. And yeah, I think, like you said, to stress the story, that part of it really, it all felt really earned. And that to me is the most satisfying aspect, is that he was challenged with introducing new characters to assume the role in the stead of these classic characters who are a part of this, like Han Solo and Leia and obviously Luke to an extent, and introducing characters like Rey and Finn and Kylo Ren was going to be a major challenge on his part. And I think that they fleshed out terrific young new characters, thanks to obviously great performances, but a really great script that I think set up a really interesting mythology, new mythology, or built upon the existing mythology in a really bright, vibrant way. And I think it has unlimited potential with these next two movies. But for me, Graham, the best part about this, other than obviously the way it looked and the action and John Williams' score and Harrison Ford looking like himself again, was these new characters, especially Rey and Finn. How about you?
Oh, yeah, they're amazing. I love the story of a stormtrooper who, you know, makes a conscious choice to break away from the dark side and, you know, join the good side. That's an awesome conceit. And Rey is already just an amazing character. So strong, resourceful, brave. I just look forward to seeing how she progresses. You know, this movie leaves us with her meeting up with Luke, and you know the biggest moment of the movie at the very end, and it's really going to be interesting to see what happens, because we're going to have to go back in the second movie. You know, we're going to have to go back to figure out who Rey is, who her parents are, why she has the Force. And we're going to have to get a lot of backstory about what happened to Luke to basically explain what put us in the position we were in Force Awakens. So, yeah, I love the characters. Now, I want to ask you, though, about Kylo Ren, because first of all, with Kylo Ren, I thought every time he's wearing the mask, you know, I thought that the way that they showed his powers and his dark side powers, the way that he controlled the Force was awesome, so effective, and made him look so terrifyingly strong with the Force, in the ways that, you know, he would like choke people with the Force and move them and smash things up, and the way he moved his body language when he's like wearing the cloak and the mask was awesome. Now when he takes off the mask and it's Adam Driver, all of a sudden it's emo Ren, and I'm interested to see where that's going to go. I think that the storytelling definitely carried that character through some of those moments. I love what happened. You know, the fact that he killed Han Solo's father, or he killed his own father, Han Solo. I thought that was a great place for the story to go in terms of it moving forward, and it was dramatic and surprising and sad. But you know, I'd always been, as just a fan of pop culture, I went into this movie familiar with Adam Driver, and he's an acquired taste. And you know, I'm going to wait and see how it goes. I'm open-minded, but like he's an acquired taste. So, and he's not really like a guy that blends into any role. Like he's got such a unique face and voice and persona that it's going to be interesting to see how he sort of blends into the story, or if it's just sort of a showcase of Adam Driver, who is an acquired taste, meaning if you like him, you like him, and if you don't, it's because you're sort of taken aback by that persona I mentioned, which is going to be interesting.
Well, this I think will be a source of contention for some people, and like I said to you, I think how you feel about Adam Driver's performance might reflect what you brought into this movie and how you felt about him, because, you know, I happen to like him a lot. I think he's great on Girls. I think he was great. I think he's great in movies like While We're Young. I think he's really talented, and I've liked everything that he's been in so far. So I was excited about his role in this, and especially about the character. But, you know, I don't really think that you get the same Adam Driver in this that you do in roles like that. I think he sort of shed his Adam Driver-ness that you're talking about.
He shed his mustache.
Yes, and I thought he played it very straight, to be honest with you, and I trusted Abrams, but I don't really feel like I needed to, because I think that he's a strong actor, and I felt like he was really strong here. And, you know, you mentioned the mask coming off, and I think that is going to be a big scene for a lot of people. And the way I read that is, I'm with you. I think that whenever he has the mask on, that's when that character is at its strongest. The sound effect of his voice to me is amazing. Yeah. Whenever he talks and just commands every scene that he's in, and his dialogue is just fantastic. But you see little moments even when the mask is on, but especially when the mask comes off, that I think is a big strength of the character, in that once it comes off, you see a scared kid. You know, you see a scared and confused child.
Emo Ren.
Well, if that's how you want to label it, that's fine.
It's when Han Solo is on the bridge and he's trying to get his son Ben, who he calls Ben, who's like changed his name, to come back home to his loving family. You know, it sort of seems like a lot of parents have to go through that, where their kids have this like different identity that doesn't really jive with the values that they were brought up with, because they feel like they have to go and be their own person and rebel against the loving environment in which they were raised. So I thought that was kind of cool. Like that was a sort of a funny concept of like the dad telling his like rebellious punk teenage emo kid, like, look, kid, you know, take off the cloak and, you know, the mask, and like, just come home and like, let's go hang out and build stuff in the garage together. You know, this isn't you. And I love that. And I thought for a second, what's going to happen? And sure enough, he's like, he committed to the dark side, and that's going to carry us into the next movie, at least maybe next two movies. And in that moment, when that happened, I was like, oh man, how's Chewbacca going to react to this? Chewbacca just had this really emotional response, and then he started destroying things, which led to the destruction of the Starkiller. But then our dad and I agreed on this, that there's a moment later where we see Chewbacca grieve, and obviously because Han Solo had fell through the chasm of the Starkiller, we weren't going to have a moment where Han Solo like grieved with the body of where Chewbacca grieved with the body of Han Solo. But I felt like there was a really sad moment where Chewbacca's like sort of pouting and crying that, I don't know, I'd like to go back and see how long that lasts. But I was then it moves on to R2-D2 waking up out of his robot depression, as our mom called it. And I felt like, man, I really thought that, you know, the death of his best friend, a relationship that we've known for now more than 30 years, deserved a little more of a beat than just that one scene of him kind of whimpering, you know. Well, I think Chewbacca got more dramatic scene when Han Solo was frozen in carbonite than he did when he had to watch him die.
Yeah, you know, I can kind of see where you're coming from, but I think, like you said, the sort of rampage that he goes on in the immediate aftermath is a big moment for him, and you know, you do notice that he does have a little moment of grief there after he's done that, and maybe they could have spent a little more time with him, but they made a choice to give that extended grieving moment to Leia, who probably deserved it a little more in terms of which character you're going to pick to give that big moment, where she, maybe instead of Rey, she could have shared that moment with Chewie, who sort of just walked by Leia in that moment.
Yeah, you know? I don't know. Well, I would just argue, this is a nerdy argument, but like, I think that Chewbacca deserves more of that because he's been, you know, down from the beginning since way before Leia came on the scene. They're like best buddies and homies, and even after Leia, Chewbacca was literally his wingman when they went on to like go back to smuggling. So, you know,
nerdy Star Wars. I think he did what a smuggling, you know, space pirate bro would do in the immediate aftermath, and that was blow stuff up in his honor, you know, and that's what happened. And so that didn't bug me as much, but I want to just quickly go back to Kylo Ren and the point that I was making about him being a disturbed young man and him having to make that choice. And I think that, and again, the bar was very low, but I think that they honestly did way more effectively with this character in the limited time he had in this movie and with his arc, what they had the opportunity to do with Anakin for an entire trilogy with the prequel.
Yeah, absolutely.
And show just how this person is wrestling with the demons that he has and how he's wrestling with that choice he has to make. And, you know, how a young person with unlimited potential, as we see that he has, can make the wrong choice when he has bad influences. And so that aspect of it really worked for me. And I thought that when you saw his face, you could see that confusion in that sort of determination to, you know, and that, you know, the problems. And I love the fact that he outwardly expresses that he's having trouble and that he is tempted to choose the light over the dark side. I thought that was great. So, you know,
that's a great point.
And you see it with the mask on too, because I mean, you see him throw temper tantrums when something doesn't go right. And so you see this guy, he's a big badass, but he's a kid, you know, and he does, and he wants to live, you know, this life in the shadow of Darth Vader, but Darth Vader, as, you know, big and bad as he was, he had composure, you know, and he wouldn't have done that. And so he's failing to sort of live up to that legacy in that moment. So this character has a long way to go, and I think they set up the mythology extremely well, and I think Driver delivered it a big time. So I'm a fan of Kylo Ren, for sure. And
I am too.
And also, you know, if you have trepidations about Kylo Ren without the mask, as you saw, you know, down the stretch of this movie, he got a pretty serious scar during that lightsaber battle. So if he doesn't have the mask, it'll be less of Adam Driver's face because of a scar obscuring it, but I think he'll be wearing the mask a little bit more for the rest of the trilogy.
So speaking of Kylo Ren, I just want to kind of, and again, I think I'm with everyone that loved this movie. I loved it, and I have been thinking about it a lot, and cannot wait to see it again over and over. But I just want to talk about some of the like concerns I have and issues that initially popped up. Because I made this video that said this new Star Wars might stink, and it definitely doesn't stink, but I do have some issues with it. And so one is the reveal of Kylo Ren being Han Solo and Leia's son. Instead of infusing that huge reveal with any kind of drama, they simply just rolled it out with expository dialogue, which is very disappointing. It's like they just like literally just threw that in there, and there wasn't, that could have been like a dramatic reveal with like a really impactful John Williams music cue, and they just kind of like threw away. It's like, oh, okay, well, I guess he's just their son. All right, well, that affects everything going forward. That wasn't really true to like how all this other stuff has been, how all the other major plot points that have to do with like lineage and family and this saga have worked in the past. And I felt like that was kind of a rushed, wasted opportunity. And that was delivered in a scene with the Supreme Leader Snoke. Okay, and this is my biggest problem with the movie. Now, not with his like delivery and what he says and the delivery of the lines, but the fact that he looks like just sort of a half-assed CGI character. They missed on this in the first. I let out a sigh when I saw it. And for the first movie, hopefully, Craig on another film nerd has said hopefully they'll make him more of like a real life kind of practical character in the next movie when we see him not in hologram form. But man, it's just, he looks like one of the aliens from Crystal Skull mixed with Brainiac from DC Comics, and it's really disappointing. And I think that if this is where you're going to start to see apologists who can't be objective about this. Again, I love the movie, but it's a shitty design.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it looked bad and it played strangely. But like you said, I mean, the stuff that he was saying, it was interesting, but it was hard not to be distracted by his design.
Yeah.
While he was saying those things, it reminded, and this might not be a problem for a lot of people, but it kind of reminded me of like a Marvel movie in a way. And it reminded me of those scenes with Thanos in like Guardians of the Galaxy and other stuff that he's been
well,
in so far.
I disagree with you. I disagree with you about Thanos. I'm so far very impressed with that design.
Well,
but that's just my opinion. But yeah, I agree with your sentiment for sure.
It's just obviously CG, and that's the problem. And I think Snoke is going to look exactly like he looks in these movies unless Rian Johnson and Kathleen Kennedy hears the issues that people have with what this character looks like in this first movie, but something tells me this is the Snoke that we're going to get. And plus, I mean, Andy Serkis is a mocap performer in the eyes of most people. And Snoke, with what we saw so far, doesn't look like Andy Serkis. It looks like a character he's mocapping. So that tells me, even with makeup, and so that tells me that we're not going to get a practical version of this. We might get something that looks fairly photo real. But I would say in the same way that Caesar looked fairly photoreal in the Planet of the Apes movies. So I think that's something we're going to have to live with moving forward and something that we're going to have to deal with just hope that the story and what the character does matters more and doesn't distract us as much. Mm-hmm. But I also think that we've been trained to look for this kind of stuff and look for these kinds of problems. And maybe the next time we see it, we'll focus more on the story and how this character works instead of the aesthetic aspect of it. But I agree with you, it was distracting the first time.
All right, so the other full CGI character, Maz, it just wasn't like innovative or creative enough to sort of be like, okay, well, cool. They've kind of really done something amazing here for the new Star Wars movie. It was just another mocap CGI character that actually looked like Linda Hunt, and like the character from The Incredibles, I forget her name in that, the Q character, sort of. So it's like, really? You don't just have to make a CGI character, you have to make a great one. And like Gollum, in Lord of the Rings, that character was so special to everybody and innovative because we'd never seen anything like it before. And you're basically just taking other technology and just reusing it here and to do something not that extraordinary. So I'm very disappointed in the Maz character. So far, another quick one. But again, the exposition that she's there for, that she's there to relay, is effective and intriguing.
That's more of my issue. I agree again. Why make it CG when you don't have to, especially when you have a great actress like Lupita Nyong'o, whose presence I would rather actually physically see on screen than this character she's most.
Yeah.
But my issue was more with the fact that Maz is just strictly an expository character. She's there just to rattle off exposition where I just thought maybe another existing character could have done what she's doing. So why does she have the lightsaber? I just don't really understand. It just seems unnecessary. It seems like a way to you're forcing something to give one of these hot actors something to do. And it just, that whole sequence, I love sort of like the Cantina 2.0 moment when they walked in there and the music was great and all the different alien characters were really cool. And there are
many of them, many of them puppets.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of that scene really works, but for me, the Maz character has yet to really work.
God, you make a great point. Like, they could have just put Lupita Nyong'o in like amazing makeup and made her this otherworldly, crazy alien being, and because she's a very interesting looking person. It's like, they totally missed that opportunity, and it's a shame. It's not as bad as anything like Jar Jar Binks by any means, because what she's saying is actually helping the story along, but man, it's a miss. Another quick one I wanted to say is that, and this is, I don't know, you tell me, but Carrie Fisher's voice has changed so much in the 30 years since we last saw her in Return of the Jedi. And it was distracting to me. It sort of made me feel like Karen, when you see Karen Allen in Crystal Skull, it's like, okay, that's the same person, but it's not the same person. And it was distracting.
I see what you're saying. Her voice and her look have changed, but I'm going to disagree in that it was distracting, because I thought she was really good in the movie, and I thought the character was used really well, and she was someone I was a little worried about going into the movie, just because of how long it's been since she's acted and what her behavior has sort of been like on panels and at public events and things like that. Not that it's been bad, but it's been interesting, we'll say. So I just didn't know if she would be able to tone it down, but again, I trusted Abrams to get it done, and he totally did. And I think she earned every little emotional moment that she had in the movie, and she had a very strong presence. So I had no issue with her whatsoever. I was glad to see Leia again.
Well, that's pretty much, those are my, and then a couple of other instances where I felt like CGI wasn't really necessary with the pawn shop dealer, who apparently is played by Simon Pegg on Jakku. Being, an obviously CGI character where it wasn't necessary. And then also the Rathtars, their sort of CGI design, it just felt like unnecessary. But I realized that, there's a whole group of talented people at ILM, and that's their specialty, and they want to give these guys something to do. I wish that some of that, especially when, it was so made so clear in all the promotional and behind the scenes material going into this, that it was going to be more of a practical effects driven movie. I wish that they would have much more of the responsibility for creating creatures and characters to the makeup and like puppeteer department. But there's still a ton of full CGI characters: Maz, the Rathtars, Snoke, the pawn shop dealer, who played major parts in this. And that's a little disappointing based on all of JJ's, all of his trumpeting, all of the practical effects they were going to be using. They certainly were there in a great deal, but it's like, well, but yet you still got these, you still incorporated a lot of what I perceive to be unnecessary CGI into places that played big parts in the movie. And for me, sort of contradicted the quote unquote mission of this movie, which was to bring it back to sort of the handmade, practical aspects that made the first three movies so great.
Yeah, I agree to an extent. The Rathar sequence bothered me a little more because it felt kind of like that one extra stuffed in action sequence that may not have been necessary to, especially to drive the story, right? I mean, it gives them an obstacle in that moment, but I just didn't know how necessary it was to move things along. But what I did like about that is that it showed, I think that they wanted an opportunity in the story to show Han Solo smuggling, you know, whereas we heard about it in the original trilogy, we actually got to see him doing it in the kind of characters he has to deal with in that line of work. So I thought that was really cool. And again, Harrison Ford and Chewbacca were fantastic. And
mm-hmm.
Daisy Ridley and John Boyega do a lot of fun stuff in that sequence. And also, I remember back when this movie was being cast, they announced that actors from the movie The Raid, the martial arts cult classic now, were going to be a part of this. And when they announced that, I thought to myself, wow, like they're going to be incorporating that level of action, hand-to-hand combat or martial arts or something into the action of Star Wars, and that's going to be awesome. I'm glad that they're going to be a part of this. And they appear during that sequence in what ends up being a glorified cameo, and I can certainly live with that just because it's fun to see those guys. But, man, like, I'm just kind of like, what a missed opportunity to have those guys, you know, wielding lightsabers or something and doing something insane, but it's no big deal. That's a very, very small little quibble. But,
yeah,
Graham, I want to focus just quickly on the stuff that we absolutely loved, and we mm-hmm. touched on that stuff. And I want to start with the opening crawl of this movie, mm-hmm. which honestly may have been the highlight of the whole mm-hmm. thing for me and put me back in that universe faster than anything could in you know, the whole speculation about what's happening with Luke Skywalker. Where is he? Why isn't he in the trailers? Why do we see Han Solo? Why do we see glimpses of Leia and these older characters? Where is Luke? And Abrams and Lucasfilm and Disney just wouldn't budge on that, and they deserve a lot of credit for not revealing anything about where they were going with it. And the fact that once the crawl started, and that's the first thing they address, saying Luke Skywalker has vanished, and basically setting up the entire story around his character, that sent a charge through me that is indescribable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it made me just that is when I knew things were right again with Star Wars.
Yeah.
In that, was it the same for you? Did it excite you in a similar way?
Oh yeah. I mean, cause that was exhilarating, cause you finally get to figure out what the heck this thing's about, you know, which thankfully had been kept a secret, despite the trailers. You know, the trailers were just kind of highlights of cool things, cool looking things from the movie. And, you know, to find out what it was about, and I'm on board, you know, but we still have a long way to go. It's still, you know, we still don't know much about, and the thing about this that's kind of interesting and, you know, potentially concerning is that they're going to have to explain a lot of stuff that we didn't even see in Force Awakens. Like, we're going to have to go back sort of like Kill Bill, you know, like there's sort of a Kill Bill-esque thing where there's this massacre that has affected the entire story going forward. And we're going to have to go back and like find out what happened and who was responsible and why did Rey end up on that planet and what was Rey's part to play there. And, you know, why did Kylo turn on Luke? Like, we're going to have to hear a lot of exposition to sort of get us back on track so we can move forward. And that's, you know, I guess they're keeping these movies to about 2 hours, and then, you know, you're going to have to do a lot of that. You're going to have to move the story forward. So we'll see. But absolutely, I'm down with where the story is. It's intriguing. I love that, like, Luke is in solitude in on a temple, which is a practical location, which is pretty awesome. You know, it's not like Coruscant or something, Naboo. They've actually like got a real location for that, which is awesome, and sticks to the sort of overall message that we got going into this, that it was going to be back to sort of a reality based, to an extent, in terms of how things are created and presented, working with real tools and materials. So I love it. You know, basically, the whole movie, it begins with Luke Skywalker has vanished, and then we spend the entire movie with us, trying to actually find him, and we do at the very end of the movie. So that step's completed, and now we got to move forward.
Yeah.
And I'm into it. I'm intrigued.
Yeah. How about Luke's look with the beard and every guy? Like,
amazing.
I'm so jacked. And I'm pumped to see where like Ryan Johnson and everybody goes from here and in this next installment. But in just real quick again, you know, after the opening crawl, I love the opening sequence mm-hmm. where this character Poe Dameron is meeting with the mysterious Max von Sydow character.
Yeah, who that dude?
Yeah, exactly. So maybe we'll find out a little more about him, and then.
Yeah, I've been reading some stuff.
Well,
I've been reading online that they're saying that he might figure into Rogue One.
Oh yeah, that
yeah.
I've heard some speculation on who he could be. Sure, but we'll see. But yeah, and then we get that subversive moment where instead of just you know watching a group of stormtroopers do their bidding, we focus in on one as they're
mm-hmm.
running by, who is obviously having that moment
mm-hmm.
of confusion.
Yeah.
In John Boyega, to me, gives the best performance in the movie. He's fantastic, and obviously he's somebody whose work, you know, few people had seen. I mean, I the only thing I'd ever seen him in was Attack the Block, the science fiction movie, and I think that's probably true for everybody else. So I know people were excited that he was a part of this, but didn't really know, obviously, what his character would be and how he would fit into it moving forward, but he's terrific, and he, as many people have noted, has sort of assumed the role of the Han Solo of the new trilogy,
mm-hmm.
and I'm okay with that. I think he totally earned that.
Yep.
He has the funniest moments of this movie, and this movie's
yep.
very funny, which is,
oh, yeah.
I think all the jokes worked in this,
mm-hmm.
especially as they related to the Finn character, and Chewbacca, I think, is fantastic, and gosh, when C-3PO shows up again, he just, Anthony Daniels just slides right back into it.
That was the best. That was the funniest moment of the entire movie, and it was just so good. And I love the way they shot that with C-3PO in close-up like that. It was really
yeah.
cool looking.
Yeah, and his red arm or whatever, but BB-8, too, provides a lot of great humor, and he's
mm-hmm.
what a fantastic design. And again,
mm-hmm.
a practical effect, like you mentioned. I'm sure there are some CG BB-8 shots in
mm-hmm.
the movie, but, man, really terrific sound work and design
mm-hmm.
there, and what a great new character who says nothing but says everything in some cases. And so, yeah, I mean, this movie and gosh, the action, I mean, I love
yeah.
that they made the lightsaber battle special again. Like the prequel trilogy was kind of like the lightsaber trilogy, you know, where I think they just used this weapon that everybody loved way too often and really
yeah.
sort of devalued the moments that in which they were used. And this, I like that. It was rare, and it was sloppy, too, because they were being used by people who had never used them before. So I can't wait to see how that evolves moving forward. Maybe
mm-hmm.
maybe Luke will grab that lightsaber and get back to business. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just so pumped. And I think that this movie, as people are calling it, as The Simpsons satirized it recently, calling it The Apology, this movie in a
yeah.
way does feel like it's a big regrouping, you know, and they had to deliver on a certain level, and I think they totally did, and they made it all right again, and now there's nowhere to go, I think, but up. And
yeah.
now Ryan
Well, I
Johnson,
think it's more of a regrouping. It's just them saying, like, let's come up with a cool idea for a Star Wars movie, and just there's lots of different conceits here, like Luke Skywalker vanishing, and, you know, this girl who could potentially hold the key, but, like, the coolest basic conceit is a stormtrooper goes good.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great original idea. A stormtrooper defects and helps the resistance. That's so cool. It's a great concept, you know? And so they've got all the pieces there to, you know, upon which to build a great continuation of the saga. So, and
yeah.
on that note, and I just want to say Mark Hamill for best supporting actor. Like, that would be amazing to nominate. And he deserves it. Because his acting in that moment is outstanding. When he takes the hood off, his body language, his look, the look he gives, not only the way his character looks, which is all great, but, like, he says so much. He brings it. And I feel like that's deserving of a Best Supporting Actor nomination.
Yeah, he's great. And I can't wait to see what he can do in these next
yeah.
couple movies. And Ryan Johnson just has such an awesome opportunity as writer and director on this. And yeah, I trust him. I'm a fan of Looper, fan of Brick, and I think that this guy, he's such a movie nerd that is obviously in love with Star Wars and somebody who is going to want to do it right. So, yeah, I'm super pumped, and they nailed it, and I can't wait to see it again.
Same here.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com and aspectradioshow.com.